where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
I cannot understate the amount of pain I'm in right now.
I shouldn't be laughing, but I am.
My elbows hurt.
And Mr. Stratton, why do your elbows hurt?
I started seeing a personal trainer.
Yeah.
It's very personal. I have spots that I had no idea had muscles.
Like your elbows?
Like underneath the inside of my elbows. When is that supposed to hurt?
Because you're using the muscles that you haven't been using, apparently.
I couldn't put my hair back into my man bun.
I heard you walking down the stairs this morning. And when I say walking, I'm being generous because I don't know if it was actually walking. It was sort of like you slid your socks and then collapsed down each stair.
I'm wearing like pseudo jogging pants right now because I couldn't put jeans on.
Actually, Wayne's lucky that you put sweatpants on at all, because when I came upstairs after hearing you come down and back up the stairs, which was not probably, I shouldn't think it's funny, but it was pretty funny to me. I said, well, good luck getting on your pants, because when you work out, sometimes the hardest thing is like getting your socks and your pants on because you have to bend. And his reply was, yeah, I'm not wearing pants today. Yeah. And I said, I'll text Wayne and warn him that Scott's not wearing pants today. So we're all thankful that you decided to put your sweatpants on.
Maybe I'm not wearing pants. The listener will never know, even though we just said it. Yeah, so.
So you're sore. So the trainer's working. And when do you go back? 3 days from now?
2 days.
Two days from now.
Yeah. This is my, that was, by the way, so I'm fully into it. That was my second session.
Yeah.
After the first session, it hurt. This time, I had to stop. It's an hour session, and we got 50 minutes into it, and I called it.
Yeah, because I was on a machine. Yeah, I was working there. Out. I had my headphones on, and all of a sudden, I see Scott and his trainer walk out, and I'm like, oh, it doesn't look good.
Why? Because I was going to die.
Yeah, you looked a little rough.
Vomiting in the middle of the gym is not the best move.
That's how you change gyms.
But you know what? Hashtag CrossFit for life, right?
Oh, gosh.
You know, we got to keep this going. So
now you're all cut up. Scott's seeing a trainer.
And he can't move.
And I'm mean, because I think it's funny as you moan coming down the stairs. So everyone knows now.
So what's new with us, since you all like how personal we are with you? And I think
we've almost called the
entire audience of people who don't want to hear the rambling. And now we just have our loyal seven who like to hear about things. And we had our Disney cruise, our fifth. And it was joyous and wonderful. Really nice time. I think my favorite cruise we've done yet.
And yeah, it was great.
Two of the boys are getting older, so we got to hang out with them for a lot of it. And the two younger ones ran the ship. And we booked a couple more. So, love it. It's just, it's as business people, you know, we always watch how businesses behave and how businesses do things. And we've talked about in the past about Disney or Zappos or Ritz-Carlton. And, you know, like we've tested it. We have a good sample size now of cruises, of how many we've done. And it's just been every time. It's just been, you get off the ship, you're like, I wouldn't change anything about the staff, the ship, the company at all. So, and that's your testament to it, because we booked more. And here's the thing. I think we've said this maybe in the past, but how it started with Disney Cruises was 2011, maybe?
2011.
We were invited to be on the inaugural sailing of the Disney Dream when it was launching, and that was like a media cruise. So our friend Joanne Wallace invited us down from Disney, who we met, who lives in Toronto, and said, come on down. We'll bring you, you know, for free on a media cruise, a two-night sailing, kind of out to Castaway Cay and back, which is Disney's private island in the Bahamas. And we're like, we're not cruise people. I wasn't cruise guy, and I didn't want to do it. And a few reasons I didn't want to do it. You don't want to be stuck to an itinerary. You didn't want to be stuck on a ship with either people who are really old or bros, you know, having a booze cruise or something like that. And then so we said, well, they're flying us down. They're putting us on the boat. Let's try it. And the reason why they did it was because we had influence
back then. Now not so much.
Back then on Twitter. And so that was the job. And we loved it. And then we booked, after that, we booked a 4-night. And since then, we've booked 7-night cruises. So their ROI directly from that is quite nice.
Never mind our influence, our own dollars.
Let alone the people we've told, you know. So well done, Disney team, because you've proven there is an ROI of bribing influencers if they choose to return. So today on the show.
What are we going to talk about?
Usual stuff.
Oh, the usual stuff. You going to be okay?
No. I will not, but we will still continue.
If you hear him moaning between stories, he's just
I just scratched moving. My ear and it sent a shockwave of pain through my body. Is this good? I don't know. Is this supposed to be like this? Because
well, maybe not.
This would be what it was like if I got electrocuted, go right into a power line.
You probably wouldn't listen to me if I told you if it was good or not anyway. So I'm just going to sit back.
Is it good?
Well, should we talk about it on the podcast?
I'm looking at your Bachelor of Kinesiology behind your head here from McMaster University. Tell me.
It depends on the range of the discomfort that you're in.
It's sore.
Yeah, you seem pretty sore. If it's getting in the way of your regular ability to function in life, it might be a little bit too much.
Sore.
That's the problem with training, is if you do too much and you hurt yourself, you won't do any exercise. So like, you've become a runner, as we've shared on the podcast before. It just hurt him to take a sip of coffee, I'd like to point out. So you become a runner, right? Like, mm-hmm. You've been running every other day, 5K, kicking my butt at running, uh-huh. Very impressive, over the last 8 months, mm-hmm. year. And so I think the key will be if you keep up with the running, or if you stop running and you're just in pain all the time, then no, I would say working with a trainer is not the right way to go. But I guess we'll see.
I'm just assuming this is the beginning pain and that doesn't always stay this way. Or is it always going to be like this?
Depends how hard you work with the trainer and what your goals are.
Should take it down a notch.
Maybe just take it down a notch. Maybe if it hurts to drink your coffee, you've done too much.
Can you tell her to take it down a notch? I'm kind of scared. I don't want to. She might get mad at me and make me do more.
Sign of a good trainer. You're more scared of your trainer than your wife. All right? I'm just saying that might be a bit of a problem. What you got? Let's do your story. Let's see if you can read a story.
So I remember I was talking about it. I don't know if it was a year or 2 years ago. We also talked about it on stage before. We've said in the past that if consumers knew how much marketers knew about them, they would be terrified and horrified by the amount of data that we have about each individual and that we've willingly given up. Now, we can argue that you don't read the terms of services for sites, you don't look at things and say, this is what I'm allowing them to collect data on me. But it is shocking the amount of targeting I can do as a marketer. So we call it targeting, right? We call it targeting and profiles and like profiles and customization. Like, we call all these nice things, relevancy and all these things. But in the end, I know a lot about you to the point, except your name sometimes. But I can even get past that, and we'll get into that. So when this whole thing happened recently with Facebook and Cambridge Data Analytica and this whole explosion now of stuff, a few things came to mind, which was, in for those of you that are living under the virtual rock, about this came to fruition a week or so ago about how this analytics company got a hold of 50 million user profiles and information and used that as allegedly to help sway the US presidential election and give it to Russian groups and creating profiles and targeting and all these type of things. A couple of things. One, a lot of this stuff came out 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a new study.
No, but it just blew up now. And a couple of things of why is because the 50 million people also allowed you to see their friends lists. And then therefore, that was actually 300 million people, because all those friends connected with other people, that's where the expansion hit. And also, on top of that, one way or the other, it was a smaller group that allowed you a larger data group set. And there's a couple of things that happened here. Facebook allowed a scientist, an analytics data scientist, to go in and access it all as for an educational person, but for research purposes. And then he got hired on by Cambridge, who then he used that data that Facebook allowed him to take. This wasn't a breach. This wasn't a hacking.
No, and it's data that we've all given
this them was allowed to be taken. Yeah. And now Facebook has closed some of those loopholes. But every time you log into an, like, how do you, when you download a new app and it says sign up for the account to use it, do you sign up for the account or do you click log in with Facebook?
It depends.
But sometimes you'd log in with Facebook,
sometimes,
right?
Sometimes I log in with Facebook.
Well, you know what I'm saying, right? Some apps will say log in with Facebook. Yeah. And so when you do that, you've just allowed Facebook now all the data from that app that you use as well. They have access to all of that. And we have profiles that say, look, here's Scott. Here's the apps he's got. Things like Kill My Trainer and, you know, 0 to 5K and all the things we do. And your, it's like your search history almost, but more. It's your activities. And they get all that data as well. So they create these profiles of people. And then they can target and they can manipulate and they can do all these things.
And then the danger is when you think that you're being super careful with your data, which maybe you are, some people are, but then you're linked to other people, their data, then what's happened here is that, let's say I am less careful with my data than you are, right? Mm-hmm. So I go in and I'm logging in through Facebook and stuff, and then you're on my friends list, and then they link you through me, and then they see your app about killing your trainer. So even though maybe you were careful and you didn't log in using Facebook, now there's kind of this trail of people, right? That Facebook is so great at creating, because that's their business, is connecting people.
And now this also, what they did was they got the data from everybody, and then they also launched a personality quiz profile that you could take.
Of course.
In the page. And then you took
your first pet's name.
And then you shared it with other people. Yeah. And I got even more information and demographic information. And then we get into the whole pet's name, all these type of things, which ends up being passwords for a lot of sites too. But what this has done, even though it's old, you know, that it happened a while ago, and it was already revealed a while ago, the whole explosion now is, it's had a huge impact on Facebook's stock price. Now, mind you, that is not an indication of what of long term, because it's things will bump and they'll drop and they'll pick back up again. It's the legislation. Europe is about to come down hard on this. You don't mess with Europe when it comes to privacy. Like, Europe is the king of citizens' privacy. They're you don't mess with the EU when it comes down to these things. And individual states. It takes an attorney general in one state to lock something down, and that affects Facebook across the board. So it's going to be interesting because it leads into this other story we've got here too, that was cited from Marketing Charts. What they say, Facebook use looks like it's on the decline in the U.S., so the percentage of Americans ages 12 and older who say they use Facebook has dropped to 62% this year, make it the first decline in a decade.
So crazy high, by the way.
Right. 62% of respondents reporting ever using Facebook use is down from 67% last year and matches the figure from 2015. The researchers note that usage is either down or flat in each age group, gender, and race ethnicity. This comes after a report from Forrester Research just a couple months ago that suggests that teen usage of Facebook in the U.S. may have peaked. Recently, a forecast from eMarketer called for a decline in the number of Facebook users ages 12 to 17 and 18 to 24 for the first time. The company also predicted that not all of the 2 million Americans under the age of 24 who will abandon Facebook will migrate to Instagram. Instead, Snapchat, a darling of the youth crowd, is expecting to add more users aged 12 to 24 and continue to outpace Instagram in that demographic despite having fewer users overall. Now, those are predictions. Some of those are predictions versus actual numbers. But we've been hearing this for a couple years now, right? It's always going to be the teens are fleeing Facebook. And look, you want to get teens to flee somewhere, have their parents hang out there. That's always going to happen anyways. But it's this interesting where this is the first chip in the armor of Facebook, really, when you look at it.
I think it's a reaction, though, like a fear reaction based on the information that got all this attention, and that when the attention fades, then the use will go back up. I would think so.
As we've said many times, will this stop you from buying, using, whatever? So just like a company that, it's like United Airlines that drags somebody off of a plane, will you book a ticket on them or not? Will you stop using Facebook? And the answer for the most part is no. Are there alternatives? Are there other sites? Do kids like going somewhere else? Yes. But if you're so entrenched, people are like, well, this is where MySpace died, you know, and they fell off. I'm like, this company, MySpace never had 2 billion monthly active users. When people use Facebook and they consider it the internet or the gateway to the internet. Also, it's a privilege to quit Facebook here. One of the great articles I was reading about it was one of the guys saying that Facebook is sometimes the only portal to the virtual world for some developing countries. That Facebook and their internet project, their free internet project, you access Facebook with no data charge. And that allows them to stay in touch with family, to people and all around. So it's interesting to see that sometimes you can choose not to use Facebook for a while.
There's also too, like, I know that there are schools where you have to use Facebook for different things, or that's where the group is because your professor uses it. Like, it's not always a choice for everybody. There's an interesting article here talking about, kind of related to what you're talking about, from the hustle.co. It says, there's no date on it. It's fairly recent, but it says on Wednesday afternoon, Kylie Jenner posed the question to her 24.5 million Twitter followers. So does anyone else not open Snapchat anymore, or is it just me? Ugh, this is so sad. So first of all, this is hysterical to me because it's happening on Twitter, and no site have we talked about dying more than Twitter. Okay, so here's Kylie Jenner, clearly the poster child for the millennial influencer, on Twitter saying that Snapchat is dead. And actually, it had a pretty big reaction. It says it was retweeted 300,000 times, and that when markets opened the next day, so she tweeted it on a Wednesday afternoon, when the markets opened on the Thursday morning, Snap Inc. stock tumbled as much as 7.2%, which is the equivalent of $1.3 billion in market value. It says, while analysts can't conclusively determine whether the tweet was solely responsible for Snap's decline, but I mean, it's kind of a sharp decline after one person shared something, it serves as a reminder of just how dependent Snap is on influencers. As recently as 2016, Jenner was Snapchat's most viewed user by a long shot, and her declaration didn't go unnoticed by Wall Street. Many comments on Jenner's post echoed discontent with Snap's redesign earlier in the week and the company's abandonment of its core audience. So there's a few interesting things here. First of all, I think it shows what that market value is. And it's one of the things you were talking about Facebook, is that markets are about predictions, right? This idea of this is what we think is going to happen. So stock price goes down because people say this news that came out, that's going to make people stop using Facebook. So therefore, we're going to sell our stock before that happens. It doesn't mean that it's already happened. It's two very different things. If Facebook use had actually gone down, then that's one thing. And this being shared 300,000 times is pretty serious. But the stock value is about that fear, right? That's about people seeing this and saying, oh my gosh, if Kylie Jenner doesn't say Snapchat's cool anymore, people are going to start using it. Therefore, I'm going to sell my stock. Therefore, the stock price is going to start going down, right? Which is what you see here. It's hysterical that it's on Twitter. It's just like the grandfather of, like, people. How many times do people say that it's dead? No one uses Twitter anymore. And here she goes to Twitter to share her disapproval with Snapchat. That's hysterical to me. And then it says she followed it up, which is funny too. Followed up by another tweet 11 minutes later. She wrote, still love you though, Snap. My first love, which is so funny because how many times do we talk about the apology, like where you take down your first tweet? Yeah, it never really catches up to the first tweet. So, and it says in no way did it recoup Snap's losses, which is hysterical.
Since Snapchat's on a roll here, Rihanna doesn't think much of Snapchat either. Snapchat put her an ad for a game called Would You Rather. So you know that game, you know the game Would You Rather This or This. And they put out one features photos of the singer of Rihanna and Chris Brown, and said, "Would you rather slap Rihanna or punch Chris Brown?"
And Snapchat put that out, or someone put it out on Snapchat?
That's a Snapchat ad for Snapchat, because they were doing this "Would you rather" type of thing.
It's just bad decision making.
As most of you know, Brown pleaded guilty in 2009 to assaulting Rihanna during an argument when they were dating. Snapchat released an apology. It says the advert was reviewed and approved in error, as it violates our advertising guidelines.
Seriously, an error.
Rihanna posted a statement on Thursday about the incident on her Instagram story, criticizing the company for making light of domestic violence. Quote, "Now, Snapchat, I know you already know you ain't my fave app out there, but I'm just trying to figure out what the point was with this mess," the singer wrote. "I'd love to call it ignorance, but I know you ain't that dumb. You spent money to animate something that would intentionally bring shame to domestic violence victims and make a joke out of it." The award-winning singer ended by saying, "You let us down. Shame on you. Throw the whole app appology." Instead of apology, an apology. Well, that made up word. Snapchat responded to Rihanna's posting in a statement. "This advertising is disgusting and never should have appeared on our service. We're sorry we made the terrible mistake of allowing it through our review process." That, which is a better apology, by the way, than the first one. Some, including rapper Joe Budden, took Rihanna's comments as wanting fans to delete Snapchat. So that happened. And then Chrissy Teigen also just quit as well. And these are, you know, big players of the actual app as well. So, you know, when you live by the influencer and you die by the influencer, and if Kylie and Rihanna and Chrissy all say it's not good anymore, your users listen, right? You know, they can make fortunes for companies.
I would say, too, that if let's say something not as extreme, because what Rihanna's talking about is like an offensive thing that they created, which is awful. Right. So what you're talking about when you look at what Kylie said is just boredom, just not getting what she used to, whatever it was.
It's not relevant anymore, yeah.
She just, not relevant, not interesting. So, and boredom happens with a lot of different things, right? When something's built on kind of this fuel of people putting new content into it, that it can be contagious. When it stops kind of being fueled and it starts to get boring, people stop opening it, right? When if you go a couple times and you open it up and there's nothing there that you really wanted to see, you stop going. There's so many other places to go. There's so many other distractions and other things to look at. And so it's very likely that if Kylie Jenner is feeling that other people are feeling it too. And so less people are going to be opening it. And that feeds on itself. Or the opposite of feeds on itself, I guess. It kind of wears away, right? Which we've seen with a lot of different platforms.
What was the last app or social thing or something that you used a bunch and then you just really kind of just faded on you?
I don't know, because I use it differently, I think. Like, I like Snapchat, but it's mostly to read. I read, like, a magazine. Like, I would used to read magazines. I look at magazines and food and recipes and stuff on Snapchat. I don't talk to anyone on Snapchat, but I never really have. But I'm old, so I just don't think I was using Snapchat the way, like, our kids use Snapchat.
Yeah. What about Twitter?
Yeah, sometimes, but I still really like Twitter. I've actually been kind of exhausted with Facebook. I haven't been posting things on Facebook lately.
Facebook is maybe the one that's been tiring you out.
But it's not so much that it tires me out. It's just it's the same thing that happens with it's the same people sharing similar things, and eventually it's kind of like either it's someone I really care about and I already knew that information and I talked to them in person. Like I like seeing when major things happen in people's lives on Facebook, and I like that. You know, you learn that someone lost someone important to them, or you learn that somebody's getting married, or you see pictures of someone's new baby. That's awesome. And I love that about Facebook. But I don't actually need to engage on Facebook to see those things. I can open it. I don't have to actually comment. Twitter, I do go through phases on Twitter where I am more engaged or less engaged. But that has, I've learned over the years, that has more to do with me and how much time I want to spend. Because I think Twitter takes more time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I have to work a little harder on Twitter to see the things I want to see. And I'm okay with that. I let Instagram's still my favorite place to go and look, mostly because I think it's the most positive. And I tend to feel, and I see those things as well. Like what I was talking about, Facebook, not as much the sad, but the pictures and stuff. I see that on Instagram. So I like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. And I haven't joined a new social media site in a very, very, very long time. So,
you're not on Venmo?
No, which we're going to talk about. I think it's in tomorrow, next week's list. But
yeah, it's.
And then LinkedIn is just, I don't really consider it a social media site. So.
And that's the shift for me is I barely look at our Facebook page, the unmarketing page, which for the previous year, I was all in on that one.
Yeah.
I'm on LinkedIn now more than ever because I think it's now turning into a social media site. They're much more content focused and update and status focused. And I have to accept connection requests and then never talk to the person again after I do that. So that's important. And, I check Instagram a lot. I check Instagram stories a lot.
Yeah, I like
too.
Instagram.
I never got into Snapchat. I got a good following on it. I deleted it.
Yeah.
I do Instagram stories. I like looking at those. I like going through them. So, and I think the kids don't know I'm checking those. So it's nice. It's the only way I can get in there and see their stuff because they've blocked me on all the other platforms. So Wayne, you anything you kind of, you were into a lot and now faded for you at all?
Facebook's
faded for you. And is this out of relevancy, out of just tired of it? What was it?
Mostly. Yeah. Relevancy is just like, it's getting stale. And
yeah. You just wondered why you were looking there at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a big point. Relevancy is everything. If I look at it and say, well, why? You know, that's it. People listening right now that are in their own business, running a business, that should be your biggest fear, is that just your relevancy goes away. people, when they say why, am I here? Why am I buying? Why would I use this place instead of this place? That creates that gap, if I may, that opening to say, why can't I go somewhere else? It's never, why am I here? Why do we choose this? Why am I clicking here? And I get that with games a lot too. And usually I'll convince our buddy Jay to use a game like Golf Blitz or something that I've tried, and then I'll get him all hooked on it, and then I'll just stop playing it. You know, it's more of an attention span thing than anything else, but that's a huge part. Relevancy drives all this stuff, so it's important. And I just saw something on recently on it, and I thought it was brilliant on a tech side of things. And this is William Legate on Twitter, who's one of the wonderful students from the school in Florida that had the terrible shooting that happened, and they stood up and said no more. He did a brilliant thing among a thousand brilliant things that these kids have done. On a tech geek side of things, what he did was fascinating to me. He put out a tweet, this is in February, and he said, contact Amazon support in less than 2 seconds to show your disapproval of them hosting NRA TV using this special link below with hashtag boycott NRA. He said, I'm not joking. All you have to do is click it. I did all the hard work for you. And here's the thing. You click the link that he has in his tweet, and it's old school kind of HTML code, and you click it and it automatically opens up your Twitter DM, and it goes to @AmazonHelp, and it automatically has a pre-filled in text. It says, hi, I'm a Prime member and I'm reaching out because I'm deeply concerned that Amazon is playing a part in America's gun culture and indirectly the death of children due to hosting of NRA TV. I understand that Amazon has a policy against sale of firearms, and I believe that hosting this show is just as bad, if not worse. I cannot continue to be a customer of any service who funds, hosts, or promotes anything related to the NRA. I hope you take my concerns seriously.
It's great because he just thought of all the reasons that people wouldn't. Like, he gave people all the reasons. There are all the reasons of the world to help. But then, you know, the reasons not to share the message are, you know, you get busy or it's hard or you don't know how to do it. And he made it so simple. So it's a brilliant,
and since he brilliant, can track brilliant the clicks, thing to do. Since it's his tweet, he can track the clicks through.
Yeah.
300,000 messages were sent within a day or two, a day or three of this being created.
That's awesome.
So, and Amazon said they were pulling the show.
Good. Good for them.
So I feel good about the future. I feel good about who's rising up.
Yeah.
I feel good about the kids that you can show, look, here's our tools. You know, here's our, and people say, you know what, well, who are these kids or something? And they just suddenly took an interest. No, they've grown up on it. They've grown up on these, and
it's always been groups of people that other people call kids that change the world.
Right. Always. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I just found it a genius type of thing where they say click. And I've seen this with emails. You can click here and it'll auto-populate something in an email. I just thought it was brilliant use of Twitter that would put pressure on a brand to do something.
And it worked, it sounds like, right?
It did. I liked it very, very much.
I have a story about Starbucks, which is completely unrelated to what we just talked about, but it's more good news, I think.
Yeah.
And it's from Starbucks.com. So I guess this is their press release about it, which I think is cool. It says, Starbucks has reached 100% pay equity for partners of all genders and races performing similar work across the United States, the company announced Wednesday. Roughly 10 years ago, we began serious work to ensure women and men of all ethnicities and races are compensated fairly at Starbucks, said Lucy Helm, chief partner officer at Starbucks. The accomplishment is the result of years of work and commitment. So obviously this is great news, and it's especially great news because Starbucks is such a visible big company, and so big companies can set the tone for what other companies can do, right? So other companies can see this and say, you know, you want to be the Starbucks of your industry. Well, it's not only about being this and that. It's also about pay equity. And I think that that's always a good thing when we see big companies doing good stuff. And one of the things that I thought was cool is they talked a little bit further on in the article about a woman from the UN. It says that who worked with United Nations and pay equity partners and all this stuff. And it says Sarah Bowen, who's an attorney who leads Starbucks inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility team, who's been working on pay equity for years. And I thought that was really great. I like first of all, I love the name of their team. Like, we've talked in other companies that we've looked at where they've tried to name inclusivity teams. I think it was Google, and they were so ridiculous. So I think it's great that they have all of this together. And it says that she grew up and really realized very young in life about inequality and decided that she found it unacceptable. And so she set to work to do it, and that they were formative experiences for her when she was young. And so she set herself down on this path. And it's interesting with having kids and being a parent. It says in high school, she found mock trial and her team competed nationally. She started to see that a career in law could mean righting wrongs and changing the systems that continued to hold certain populations back. She knew by her second year at Stanford Law that she wanted to be an employment lawyer to practice anti-discrimination law in the places people found economic empowerment. And I think what I really liked when I was reading this was not only that Starbucks had done this, but that what a great way to shine light on people in your company that have been a part of doing it. Like, for it's one thing for the company to take credit, but companies are made up of people. And here they are highlighting this woman who's a part of their team, who has this, you know, unique education and background and came in and was really part of fighting this kind of good fight for them. And I think I like to see when companies kind of celebrate their employees who are doing some cool things. And so I thought that was really great. And I'm hoping that there'll be kind of the ripple effect of what Starbucks has done, and that that can help other companies kind of work towards that equity. Because I think it's 80 cents on the dollar right now on average that women are paid compared to men in the same jobs in the United States, which is ridiculous in my opinion.
They have that graph there. It shows their U.S. workforce by gender, which is about 56% female. U.S. workforce by gender is about 68% female to male. By race, it's 37%-ish racial minorities versus Caucasian. And then in the U.S., it's about 45% minority versus Caucasian. And then global workforce by gender. Oh, sorry. U.S. workforce by gender. I'm sorry. U.S. workforce by gender is 56%. Starbucks U.S. workforce is 68% female. And then it shows U.S. is racial minorities, racial and ethnic minorities is 36, and Starbucks is 20% higher. And Starbucks global workforce by gender is almost 70%.
Well, because if you're looking for fair pay, why wouldn't you go and work at a company where you're going to be treated properly? So I'm not surprised that that's higher representation of women and minorities.
And to turn this into a bad story, so I'm at a gig in Seattle. I've been there a few times recently, and I was picked up. And one of the things I get when I'm doing a keynote, I get the car service picks me up at the airport with my name on a sign, and going to the car. And, you know, one thing, you're in Seattle, right? You know a few things about Seattle. You know, everybody's, when you show up, you're always asking about Pearl Jam. You're always asking about, if you're a sports fan, you're asking about, you know, them stealing the Sonics away, moving to Oklahoma City, and Starbucks and the fish market as well. But you go there and you ask about, you know, Starbucks comes up in a conversation. And so we were talking about, I don't know what it was. And we just drove by a couple coffee shops, and he's just like, there's a lot of coffee places here. And he's like, yeah, I won't drink. This is the driver to me after just kind of a subdued ride. We're almost at the hotel. And he's like, I won't go there because of the Howard Schultz, their former CEO. He was giving jobs to minorities and taking them away. And we started giving jobs to immigrants, he said. Immigrants, potentially illegal immigrants, he said to me.
Was this like an Uber or was it a car service? No, it was a
car service that the event hired. You know, and then we drove by and there's some homeless people, and he looks up, he's like, does Canada have a homeless problem?
Oh my gosh. And, sounds like a real charmer.
So this guy, like, he's just firing off the greatest hits at this point. And I'm like, nobody has a homeless problem, actually.
You decided to teach him a lesson?
Yeah. And to me, in my head, I'm like, I'm trying to be kinder. I'm trying to be gentler. I'm trying not to stick my nose.
Well, I'm not sure that your racist driver is the person you should start with.
But that's what I mean. So I'm trying to keep my nose out of things that aren't my business. It's hard to do. Some of us make brands on these things.
I didn't know you were trying this.
In my head.
Oh, okay.
Not actually trying it, but in my, I think.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
But when he directs it at me.
Oh, he's asking for it.
And I talked to him about that homeless, with air quotes, problem is actually usually a failure of the mental health situation in a city, or, and providing support and programs for people who are in need, whether it's financially or mental health wise. And he's not ready for me to disagree with him. Well, and it just goes back to Starbucks. So I won't go. At least they ousted him, the CEO of Starbucks. I'm like, no, he's the right in top of the board right now for Starbucks. Actually, he came back.
So could we, all our driving services, people who run car service companies who are, I'm sure, are listening, we're big with the car service industry. Could you maybe not hire terrible drivers?
And if you are in Seattle, by the way, head down to the fish market, watch them chuck a fish or two around, which was a hoot, but then walk down, halfway down that fish market, cross the street and go to Piroshki Piroshki.
Sounds you know like what you're doing an ad.
You know what they sell?
Piroshkis?
Piroshkis. No, they actually, they sell apple pies.
Do you know it's that weird. The reason that I very, very early on would never take an Uber was because of our Uber driver. The first time I was ever in an Uber was with Scott, and we had the four kids with us, and we went down to the stock exchange.
Yeah.
And we were driving, and we saw the World Trade Center
memorial.
Yeah. And our driver just went into a tirade about how the Jews had all called each other, and that none of the Jews were in the buildings at the World Trade Center on 9/11. Right. And even if I wasn't Jewish, and even if I wasn't intelligent, I would know that this person was insane. And he was saying it out loud, in not only to Scott and I, but to our four impressionable children, who afterwards I had to have a long talk with about how, number one, people are crazy, and two, people are racist and anti-Semitic, and that there was no, you know, Jew call around before that. I was just so shocked that it was coming out of his mouth, especially in front of the kids. And that was the end of me and Uber. It was a very short relationship. I never went back. I don't understand why somebody would voice those opinions in a service industry. Like, it offends me as a person, and it offends me as a business person.
Amazing.
On both levels. So do you want to talk about a made-up word?
No, I want to finish my piroshki ad.
Oh, I'm sorry I interrupted. Piroshkis.
They're in no way affiliated with the show, nor paid me
to do
it.
He's wearing a piroshkis shirt.
But
it's a t-shirt that says piroshkis.
I was trying to find something to eat, and I just see a lineup outside somewhere, and I'm like, what is this lineup for? This little stall. And so I go on Yelp, and I see this, just people glowing over this piroshkis place. It's just a filling of beef or cheese, or, and then there's dessert ones, and it's just like a dough around a meat for me. And I just saw these raving reviews, so I stood in line too, like 9-10 people, which I don't do. And then I sat there in one of the three seats, and I ate it, and my eye twitched, and it was ridiculous.
Your trainer know that you were eating piroshkis?
This is pre-trainer. This is PT. This is PT back in the day.
Yeah. The good old days when you could still walk down the stairs to get some piroshkis.
We don't talk about food, my trainer. It's just pain the whole time. All right. Alleged made-up word here. If we could roll that music.
I'm really... Oh, we're going to roll music?
Yeah.
All right.
Don't make any sense. Made-up don't mean no offense. Made-up it brings laziness. What is all this craziness?
All right, now, go.
So this is really...
Can we change the song, by the way? Allegedly made up word. Made up word.
So this is really polling the audience, okay? So when I met Mr. Scott Stratton, he uses an expression. He's frantically looking something up on his phone right now. He's probably looking up on the Urban Dictionary or something. You're not allowed to include that kind of definition here. He says the expression bush league all the time.
That's Bush League.
Says that's Bush League all the time. And I, other than his close friends, who I don't count, because obviously if you grow up in the same bubble, you're going to use the same made up words. All right. So he says Bush League, and his best friend Jay says Bush League, and like his other, they say Bush League. I have never heard another human person outside of Scott's immediate circle use the term Bush League. So what I'm asking you, audience, unpodcast audience, is do any of you use this term? And then he had the nerve to send me a tweet this morning where somebody used Bush League.
Except in a reply.
The guy's picture, he's got like a dyed blonde, like spiky hair with a headband from the 80s. For all I know, that's Scott's alter ego. And he's created fake accounts to propagate the term Bush League.
Have you not heard Bush League? Yeah, Wayne has.
He did not. He's on my side in all things.
So, what?
I have, yeah.
Audience, I want to know, is Bush League real? Nope, you're not allowed to provide.
Merriam-Webster.com.
It is not. No way.
Merriam-Webster.com. Bush League. Definition. Being of an inferior class or group of its kind, marked by a lack of sophistication or professionalism. First known use of Bush League.
Scott Stratton.
1908.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think it's made up.
Bush League.
Thank you, guys. Thanks not for being here.
Not made up word. It makes no sense. Not made up word. It makes lots of sense.
It's made totally up made
word.
Up.
Everybody uses it. Not a made up word.
I don't put it above you to fake sources. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.